This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, we're getting reactions from different stakeholders to the resignation of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin.
First, we hear from Bersih 2.0 about what civil society organizations would like to see. And then, how are youth groups reacting, especially since Undi 18 became something of a bargaining chip? And finally, we hear from businesses.
So, we want your reactions too. What kind of government would you like to see from this? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and if you feel things have moved very quickly, just a little reminder, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin resigned yesterday as Prime Minister. As of now, he is still caretaker Prime Minister, though the Agong has appointed him as such until a successor can be appointed based on majority in Parliament. Needless to say, this, of course, has elicited plenty of reactions. And we're going to spend today looking at, I think, three specific facets of that and ways in which they've reacted and the ways in which they have thoughts on what might happen next.
As a reminder, while we talk about what it is that we'd like to see come out of this, the Agong has asked for SDs to be submitted by MPs to the palace tomorrow by 4 p.m. So we're going to see what comes of that. And we also discussed that earlier on in our show. If you missed that interview, it was actually really informative and you can check that out on our site. But suffice to say that that's not the end of the story, right? Once it is that we do have a prime minister, however it is that comes about, we do also need to accept that, well, GE is likely around the corner as and when the pandemic ebbs. And so there is still going to be a lot of work that needs to be done in order to ensure some form of stability until that happens. And so to start off, I think we are looking at a way by which that could be achieved, you know, that idea of stability or that idea of good governance in the meantime, because Bersih 2.0, that is the Coalition for Clean and Fair Elections, has urged for the future Prime Minister to commit to a vision of multi-party governance and institutional reform. And they actually released the statement along with several other CSOs or civil society organizations.
So core to the statement that they've released are several calls that they're making to outline what this would look like. So they said that they would like the government to not focus on horse trading over numbers and positions, as it has proved to be a recipe for instability. And instead they went on to talk about how that they would like to see a more effective governance when it comes to health and economy. They also pointed out that a short-sighted and self-serving government would be ruthlessly punished by voters in the next election, and that endless political machinations, because of a winner-takes-all mode to politics, has basically ended in a hung parliament for the past year and a half, and that this is something that we should prevent from happening and that we need to keep in mind as we move forward. So Bersih is also calling for the new PM to quickly convene a special meeting and table a motion of confidence to prove his majority, as well as to fulfill the demand of Article 43(2) of the Federal Constitution, which is to say, to appoint a member of the lower house who, in the King's judgment, is likely to command the confidence of the majority.
So I think that this is coming on top of when we asked yesterday, you know, how are you feeling about this? And essentially, who would you like to see as prime minister? We got a fair number of responses, not looking at names per se, but talking about structures instead and talking about, for example, I think what intrigues me is that for the longest time, we didn't hear these terms at all. And now suddenly they're everywhere. Minority government, coalition government, confidence and supply agreements. For the longest time, we were so focused on the major parties and the idea that we would always have one party or a coalition of main parties completely agreeing with one another, you know, just ruling in perpetuity. And now what we're talking about instead is more fragmentation, but that doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing, right? More discussion, more viewpoints. And I think that's really what we wanted to explore in this first part, what it is that that might look like. What would a multi-partisan government, again, terms that we didn't ordinarily use, we didn't use before, what might that look like? What might it achieve?
And these are all things that, as you said, because we haven't heard about it, because we haven't had to contend with a different idea of governance and democracy for so very long. And then, you know, in the last few years, we find ourselves now realizing or learning that there are other ways that things can be done. So as we move forward, I think these are things that are worth thinking about and talking about. And that's what we're going to be focusing on. We're going to be speaking very shortly with Thomas Phan from Bersay 2.0 about this vision of multi-party governance and institutional reform. But meanwhile, let us know what kind of government would you like to see from all of this. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Build Fairer Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:15. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we're focusing on reactions to the Prime Minister's resignation and what we might want as we move forward. So we'd like to hear from you. What kind of government would you like to see? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now to speak about this from the civil society point of view, we have joining us Thomas Phan, chairperson of Bersay 2.0. Thomas, thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So let's talk about those reforms that you're proposing, right, to be considered when it comes to a cross-party political stability pact. Could you tell us more about this proposal?
Yeah, sure. I think looking at the situation right now, where obviously there is no one party or coalition that has all the numbers, unless that has changed in the last few hours, there is a need for the different coalitions and party to start negotiating and talking to each other. So as to get enough support to function as a government. So we believe that this is actually a good time to talk about reforms. And I think it was actually the Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin that on just last Friday put that right on the table. Of course, he did it out of desperation as a last-ditch effort to stay in power. But he went on national TV, as we know, to make this a 7-point institutional reform offer to the opposition, that if they would support him in the upcoming confidence vote and also the budget bills, then he would carry out this reform. And that was just his opening offer. And to us, that was a good offer, because these were the issues that not only were groups like Bersay pushing for over the years, But also part of the Pakatan Harapan manifesto. And in one go, he put it on the table, fair and square, but very quickly also we saw that taken off the table by the opposition. But we hope that in this next few days or weeks of negotiation, the reform agenda would be put back on the table, because it is not only good for you know, civil society, but it is good for the country that we have this reform. So we propose a cross-party political, cross-party peace plan to be negotiated upon by the interested parties, those who wants to be the next government. And first of all, there should be a tripartite federal state council on health and economy, because the crisis right now really is a health and economic crisis, and we need all hands on deck. In other words, we need all parties to start talking to each other and working with each other to solve the problem, not only at the state level, but also at the at the federal level, but also at the state level. And this would incorporate experts from private sector, civil society and all to resolve this problem. And also taking up Muhyiddin's offer of term limit for Prime Minister, this should be seriously considered, because We do not want to have someone who rules for years and years, years and, you know, and because with that familiarity, it can breed corruption as well. And thirdly, there should be a cabinet manual. What is a cabinet manual? This is an idea that came from the UK, where, you know, UK doesn't have a constitution like we do. We have a federal constitution. But the federal constitution is not comprehensive in a sense that it's silent on many things. And we are, in this point in our history, going into many uncharted waters. You know, what is a caretaker government? You know, and how do you form a government in between elections? This is a new territory. And these are what cabinet manuals are, to address some of this so that it is fully in compliance with the federal constitution, but addresses some of these issues. Then fourthly, parliamentary reform. And this is the big proposal. I think if out of the 10 proposals that we propose, you're not interested in any, take and have to just take one, parliamentary reform, to strengthen our parliament, to make it effective as a check and balance institution. That will be something that will go a long way, I think, to strengthen parliament and also promote bipartisanship between the government and also the opposition. As it stands right now, I mean, the people have called parliament by different names. It's a circus, it's a zoo, you know, because that's what people see on national TV. But the real work of parliament, of real parliaments, is actually in the select committees. And we need more of them, and we need it to be fairly represented by both government and opposition so that they can play a meaningful role in scrutinizing policies, laws that the government may put forth. And so by the time it goes on the floor for debate, it's not a shouting match, but there is substantial debate that they can receive. You know, so parliamentary reform is key. And also reform of the Attorney General's Chambers, MACC, and also Inland Revenue Board, because these are currently direct appointment by the Prime Minister of the day. And oftentimes, there is suspicion and also definitely truth that they have been weaponized against the opposition and also activists. The Attorney General is the one who decides who to charge, who not to charge, what case to drop, or, you know, before it's brought to the court or not. And that is why this position need to be separated from that of a public prosecutor. The public prosecutor has to be an independent institution, you know, totally from the executive of the day, so that they can decide impartially who to prosecute, who not to prosecute, and not to be used as a weapon, a political weapon. So this is one. Next one, the sixth one, is advancing voter supremacy or Ketuanan Pengundi through the immediate implementation of Undi 18, automatic voter registration, and also the expansion of absentee voting for those out-of-region voters like from Sabah, Sarawak, overseas voters. We have probably 1 million to 2 million Malaysians who wants to vote, but find it very, very difficult. So that need to be in place. Seventhly, enact a political financing act to regulate political financing and funding, and also the funding of political party using taxpayers' money. Not popular, I know, but you know, if you don't give them money out in the open clearly that they have to be accounted for, then they will find money under the table, you know. So this is a higher price to pay, I think. Number eight, transfer of power in the registration of political party to the election commission from the registrar society. Again, this is a department that's been often used by the executive to punish their opponent. And we have been hearing that all the time. And also, ninthly, groundwork. This is just to do groundwork to prepare for a recall of Member of Parliament Act. In other words, to deal with the problem of party hopping. This is huge, must be dealt with. And also, long-term, to look at introducing proportional representation seats so that smaller party and marginal groups will have a fair representation in our democracy, and also to reorganize the election commission to be more independent and impartial through even splitting it up to include a boundary commission that take care of it. And lastly, a fixed-term parliament act. You know how we hate guessing the prime minister, you know, when is he going to call for election? None of us can, you know, book our holiday because election may be just around the corner, and for the last few years, just around the corner. And it's inconvenient, but for businesses, it's damaging because they can't plan ahead when they don't know that there's going to be a major election or not. So we call for a fixed-term parliament act. So these are the 10 that we put forth, and we hope that is on the table for negotiation for the next prime minister.
And of course, political will is so important in all this, right? There has to be a desire as well to enact this or to act on it. How would these recommendations benefit either whoever becomes the next government or whoever becomes the next opposition?
Well, you know, many of this proposal actually levels the playing field for political contestants. The parties are there contesting with each other. What the situation is right now, the playing field is not level. If I could use the analogy of a football match, right now, the home team is allowed 20 players, you know, and their goalpost, their own goalpost is very small. So it's hard to score into their goal. But if you are the away team, visiting team, you're only allowed 10 players, you know, and your goal is like huge, 30 foot. And, you know, and the playing field is not even, it slants towards the away team. This is the way our laws are right now. So what we are proposing is actually to level the playing field and set in some rule so that the political party can compete fairly and compete based on policies, ideas, and reforms, you know, rather than on issues that divide us, you know. I believe it is certainly worthy of support given the current political scenario. The new scenario is that we do not have a dominant party right now, but a fragmentation of parties. And this is probably going to be the new norm, even with a new snap election. So how do you then regulate so that parties can work together to form a sustainable government, even a minority government?
Thomas, do you think the opposition could have a similarly impactful role by forming a shadow government?
Yes. I mean, a shadow government is, again, an idea from the UK. But it is more than a term, but it means that it is fully recognized by the government, and it is fully resourced. So one of the proposals made by Tan Sri Muhyiddin the other day was interesting. It is to elevate the role of the opposition leader to the equivalent of a senior minister in cabinet. Now, some people immediately jump, thinking that, you know, that means that the opposition leader will be part of the cabinet. No, absolutely not. It just means that he is properly recognized and resourced to function as an opposition leader. So a shadow cabinet is an expansion of that idea that you are in opposition, but we recognize you are playing an important role. So the government, by law, allocate funding to you to have staff, to have proper office, and so that you can be an effective check and balance. So that certainly is an idea worth pursuing as well.
Thomas, we just have a minute left with you. In closing, has Berse discussed these proposals with stakeholders like political parties?
Yes. You know, over the last 1.5 years, we have been researching, we produced 14 research to identify weaknesses in our political system. And in all this research, we consult with political parties from both sides to hear their views and their wish lists. And we incorporate some of them and recommend some best practices in the country. So we will still be continuing to speak to them. And especially at this crucial time, I think we have sent out our statement to them officially, and also to let them know that the reform agenda needs to be on the table. It's never been, because in the past, their negotiations based around cabinet position, GLC position, and 30 ringgit durian, you know. So we want a new item on the table, reform.
Thomas, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Thomas Phan, chairperson of Bersih 2.0. And let us know, what kind of government would you like to see from all of this? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll look at this from the perspective of our young people. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It is 6:38. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And today we are looking at reactions and responses to the Prime Minister's resignation. And we've been asking you for your thoughts as well, of course, that we'd like to know what kind of government you'd like to see from this. So keep those thoughts coming. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And we do have a number of messages. So let's just have a look at some.
Okay, so we have a pair of messages, both of which are focused on race, or wanting to see a lack of race-based politics, really, at the highest level or any level. So JL says, a government that will make sure they treat all Malaysians fair and equal, no racism, no apartheid. Malaysia is not made out of only one race, so it should be a government that represents all fairly. You know, out with the old, GE14 proved that. We also have Luke, who says, we need a leader who's not a racist, for a start, a competent and non-racist one. And you know, the thing is, right, that shouldn't sound like a high bar.
I was going to say, like, those are some bare minimum demands there.
And yet, I think the reason why they are coming up with such frequency, because we heard the same thing yesterday also when we asked, you know, what would you like to see? This idea of doing away with race was also a huge one. And I think the reason why it feels like a high bar is because we haven't seen enough of it.
And you know, racism or racial politics, unfortunately, takes many forms. You know, it's one thing to have a person who doesn't outwardly present themselves that way, but eradicating it from the system is a whole other thing. And it's a process that needs to happen at every level. So I'm not surprised that this is coming up. It's certainly something that comes up a lot when we talk about reform. Keep those thoughts coming. What would you like to see from a new government? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Speaking of reform and really new faces, a huge aspect of what's led the push for change in the last couple of years has really been the youth movements, right? The impact of Undi 18 was actually so significant that last week when we saw the Prime Minister sort of put forth that olive branch, Undi 18 was actually one of the things that he used as a bargaining chip. And the notion of giving the vote to people aged 18 and above has really proven that there is a lot of political power and political will when it comes to our youth.
A bargaining chip, despite the previous impossibility of enacting it. And we've seen this playing out in a few ways, right? So, of course, there was the Lawan protests. Among the demands was the resignation, of course, of Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin. And all this really began, I think, when firstly, the joy, the elation of seeing Undi 18 become a thing was then postponed or, you know, kind of dampened by the postponement, because we did see that it was going to be implemented only in September 2022. There was a lot of pushback. There was a lot of explanation as to why that was, despite the fact that there was also a lot of debate over how those sorts of things could be done away with, like a separating of automatic voter registration and the like. The point of which is to say that I think, at least for us, and in general, when we think about what happens next, it's important to center Malaysian youth, because that's an increasingly strong and vocal, I think, component of political engagement in the country.
So that's exactly what we're going to now be talking about. And joining us for that is Jean Banisha, president of youth advocacy group Challenger Malaysia. Jean, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. This is such an important discussion to have right now. And yeah, I'm feeling many emotions as you're saying all this, because it's not just in the 18 that's, I think, become an issue.
Well, I'm glad you started with that, because we have been seeing increasing amounts of engagement and but also frustration from young Malaysians, particularly when it comes to our political situation. What have been some of the reactions since yesterday's announcement?
I think we're providing a lot of emotional support for each other, because it's been a fatiguing 500 days. It's not just a youth issue, it's a national issue. And I think the reason we're seeing most of these conversations happen among the youth is because we're very present online, and we're very comfortable navigating these spaces now. It's very different from where it was maybe 4 or 5 years ago when, you know, if we were to talk about this in a classroom, there would be a bit of hush-hush. But now it's, yeah, I disagree with the government. I don't understand what's happening. There's a lot of anxiety. I don't know if I can get a job. There's, I think, much more, I think, a craving to be in the room. And that's why we're seeing so much engagement regarding not just Undi 18. Undi 18 is, I think, the top priority for a lot of us. But because we each of us have like so many layers of the things that we care about as to why is it we're speaking out a lot more.
So let's talk about some of those issues and how we've seen the government address it, right? Because in its 17 months in government, how do you think the administration of Paikatan National did in terms of addressing youth issues?
Poorly. I don't think it's been said enough. I think we've had to compromise on basic human decency. I think university students have not been cared for. I think young doctors are not being addressed. I think there's so many groups of people among the youth now that are speaking out specific to their communities. That it's just hard to ignore. It makes me sad that we just have to, like, I don't know. I feel that the cash, I mean, we had 200 ringgit given to university students as financial aid, one-off. There was, I think, maybe an address for students who, not just students, young people who didn't have jobs, 500 ringgit, 600 ringgit, single amounts of money was given. And that's it. That's all that we were given thought of. You know, there's not enough, I think, conversation on people who were working 3-4 jobs. How do they, I don't know. Like, it just makes me so sad. Like, so many of us are just anxious and confused, and we're channeling that anger everywhere that we can. But yeah, I think most of our issues are financial. It's a fear of the outside. It's the fear of getting sick. Yeah, it's a dire situation right now.
In contrast then, how did it feel to see Undi 18 included in the PM's quote-unquote olive branch last week?
It was so condescending. It was just like, that's it? That's all? I mean, it's good, but that's it? 5? All you could think of is 5? On top of that, this whole Prime Minister resigning and the cabinet being like, it's just a response to public anger. It's a symbolic response that the leader of this entire government has left. But I think what we're not punishing right now are the MPs who have received bribes in all that time, are the MPs who have not spoken out, who have not in any way participated in aid in their own constituents. And, you know, just the sheer inefficiency of everything that is going on now. Like, we had one shot to recover our healthcare system and one shot to also make sure that our economy can recover in line with that. No opportunity was taken to do that. It was just, oh, I want this seat. I'll be prime minister. I'm going to give you durian or whatever for this vote. Where are we in the national conversation? And I don't know how much more louder can we speak now.
So what would you like to see next in terms of leadership in our country?
I think a focus on a plan. Like, I think we need a lot more transparency on where we are at with COVID cases. I want to have all these issues addressed, especially with our healthcare system, because it's such a priority right now. We cannot do anything. We can't even have an election. by right, 60 days after a prime minister resigns, we should be expecting and gearing up for elections. We can't even think in those terms anymore because it's not safe. I hope and I pray that Baginda Tuanku YDPA is going to, you know, just speed up this process of choosing leadership as fast as we can. Ideally, I would like to see that vote happen in the Dewan Rakyat. And I think it's also because we are craving transparency. We just want to know who it is who are making these decisions and why. But in maybe the next few months, we just want a bit more stability. Why are we staying at homes if not like for the fact that it's just not safe? What else can we do to make sure that there's food on the table? Just these pertinent things need to be addressed by the people in power. And I really, 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 really hope that we recover soon. It's August. I can't listen to General Gumilang without trying to tear up now.
Is there a candidate or coalition that you'd like to see leading the government until the GE?
If it were up to me, I'd hit one big reset button and see completely new faces. But I would like to see people like YB Kyrie, for example. Like, I think he's at least, not maybe as prime minister, I'm not the one to say, but I would like to see a continuity of the work that good people have been doing, at least let them continue it as we go through this time. I don't know, because personally, I'm so disillusioned with all the parties and how they've worked and how they've fought all this time. I want to hope for the best and say I hope it's the opposition bloc that we originally voted for. But I don't feel that as strongly as I did when I voted for them.
And I think, you've talked a lot about the different emotions that you and young Malaysians are going through, partly because of just everything that's happening. So moving forward then, what are the issues and policies that you want to see championed and prioritised?
I think 2018, an anti-hopping law, and I hope I don't know how to address anti-hopping without anti-money laundering and anti-bribery. But these are all systemic things that need to be addressed in the Dewan Rakyat, and we can't talk about it until there is some stability. So mostly that. But apart from that, I think higher education needs to be addressed. We don't know when students are going to go back to school, if we can do that safely, if there's going to be any cuts for fees that we're paying that are unjustified. And I really want to make a point of saying this again. We're not paying our contract doctors enough. I really hope that people look into our healthcare system properly, because this is not a new issue. It's just become more apparent now that the healthcare system is clogged. And we wouldn't have known all this as a public if it didn't become issues because of COVID. So there's great opportunity for institutional change right now. And we're not approaching it like an efficient country. We're approaching it like slugs, and it's sad.
Jean, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Jean Vanisha, president of Challenger Malaysia, speaking to us about youth issues and specifically their reactions to the resignation of the prime minister yesterday. Keep those thoughts coming. What would you like to see from the new government? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll discuss this from the perspective of businesses. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:52. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn. And we're closing off our discussion on reactions to the Prime Minister's resignation by looking at this from the perspective of businesses, and really how politics have been impacting businesses. Keep those thoughts coming, though. We're getting plenty of thoughts on what you'd like to see from the new government. Send them over. You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now joined by Dato' David Gurupadam, who is co-founder of Industries Unite. David, thanks for joining us today.
Hello. I lost you for a bit.
Oh, well, thanks for joining us. Can you hear us now?
Yes, I can. The question on the lack of political instability. Now, this has been an issue that's been there since before the Perikatan government came into being. Now, for businesses, the main problem has been twofold. One, the lack of quality direct investments, which naturally impact upon the growth of the economy. And two, the exodus of existing foreign direct investments. Now, foreign direct investments rely on market confidence. Mainly, this comes from clear policies and direction, both of which has been lacking for some time. I think that's something that we've been reading a lot about through various different publications and information and data and surveys. Now, on the lack of quality, let me address the issue of lack of quality investments. Bank Negara Malaysia, Malaysia's own economic review in 2019, now this is pre-pandemic, has showed that the economy is only expanded pre-pandemic at 1.5%, the slowest since the financial crisis. So this has been there before the pandemic. And if you compare that with we compare that to 14.4% between 2011 and 2013, that's a huge drop, to say the least, in terms of FDI, right? But let's not even talk about the pandemic right now, okay? This is pre-pandemic. And this translates to slower domestic growth, which impacts upon businesses. So from 13, so how do we measure the slower domestic growth? BNM's own report that I quoted just now says that from 13% between the periods of 2011 and 2013, it has gone down to only 6% in between 2014 and 2018. Now, this again is pre-pandemic. So therefore, the reality on the ground, we may be seeing maybe a severe contraction, regardless of what numbers are being bandied about up there. But on the ground, from our feedback from the market, it looks like it's pretty severe. Okay, that's a reality on the ground. Clearly, therefore, the answer really is that this is a problem that has been there and has to be addressed immediately, right?
And how do you think the resignation of the Prime Minister might impact all this?
Well, as I said, market confidence is very important. And obviously, this impacts on the instability of the country and the resignation of the PM. Now, we at Industries Unite, we're apolitical. We support the government of the day. And, we won't wade into the issues. However, the issues of instability and where we are in the political climate has a massive bearing and impact on the issues, the main issues that I spoke about before, which are compounded. And we fear that if this trend continues, it may be irreversible. There have been mentions of us going towards a state of a failed state. I mean, we are not there now, but certainly it's something to be concerned about because, we could come to a point where this becomes irreversible. We are already considered the sick man of Southeast Asia. We don't want to go into ICU. Yeah.
David, we've spoken about this before, but what would you say are some of the most pressing concerns when it comes to business owners?
Okay, the first concern really is opening businesses in a safe and structured way. Okay, it's pointless opening businesses if we can't be safe, because then we go into another lockdown, which is something that the industry just cannot afford right now. Two is clarity of guidelines and SOPs. Now, this has been a problem, for forever, because, in order to promote confidence in business, you need clarity in a lot of these SOPs, clarity in the guidelines, which is a problem that we've had from day one. And why is that impactful? Because, we need to have an empathetic approach to enforcement. I mean, we've not had that. We've had a big club and a big stick being waved about by enforcement. And most businesses no longer have the will to continue with this overbearing approach by enforcement and heavy fines because their pockets are empty. And you're wondering, like, why am I even going to go into it if I'm going to be, subject to so much scrutiny and in many instances, unfair consequences when the SOPs themselves are not clear. Now, the third one is fear. I mean, really, Shamila, I think that is really the sentiment on the ground. A lot of people are fearful. I mean, we see, sadly, people jumping off buildings and committing suicide and all of this. There's a lot of fear. And many are afraid of the repercussions. For example, once the current protections are lifted, mainly under the COVID Act and, of course, the loan moratorium, what happens when they have to meet these obligations. Many worry about the arrears in rental, statutory payments, utilities. Now, those are all unresolved issues. And 16 months of a virtual lockdown for many has just, you know, made it impossible for them to meet these obligations. And then the second issue is, you know, even if you wanted to resume businesses, people need capital. So capital for resumption of business is something that is really required because many have exhausted their reserves and most are in debt. They require capital to restart. Now, somehow or other, the powers that be think that, look, you know, we'll open up the economy and open up businesses and everything is going to be okay. Well, this was not the end of MCO1. This is, you know, a much more serious situation whereby even if you allow businesses to open, they don't have the capital or the infrastructure now to reopen. Resolving existing liabilities, safety, because they're also worried about the safety of the employees and customers. Are they going to be safe? And of course, the inability to travel because the restrictions, interstate and international business travels are very important in an advanced economy such as ours. So really, those are mainly the issues that plague and worry the market at the moment. Yeah.
Thanks for speaking with us today, David.
Pleasure.
That was Dato' David Gurupadam, co-founder of Industries Unite, giving us the perspective from the business sense on the Prime Minister's resignation. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.